Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Bhutang tamang sanghang namasami. I was walking after the meal this afternoon, and after the rain that we had last night, all the places that those wonderfully generous yogis had swept were completely covered in new leaves again. And I was thinking, and as I walked, I also noticed some trees are still, the leaves are green, some trees, the leaves are yellowing, and some are a beautiful rust color, the color of fall. So there's still more leaves to come. And that's the experience I've had at my cabin. I had a two-week self-retreat in September, second half of September, and every day I rake leaves. And they're still coming down. It's 2 months later, and they're still coming down. I'm sure when I go back, there will be a lot to rake up again. But we just keep raking them up. It's kind of just like our practice. We keep chipping away at it, raking up those leaves of the defilements or those times when we feel a little bit lack of motivation, and just get in there and rake that up and put in our effort. And there will come a time when there won't be any more leaves to fall. But we just have to be diligent and really just keep putting in the effort and not allowing ourselves to get kind of put aside by the fact that it seems sometimes like we put effort in and there's no results. This is, I know Ajahn Yanako kind of referred to this yesterday, but the Buddha, he did say it was a gradual path. And sometimes we read the suttas or we hear the stories and it sounds like somebody came and they heard a teaching from the Buddha and then everything opened up and they were all their defilements fell away in an instant. But I'm not going to take any explanation at that or try to come up with an explanation. But, you know, I mean, we're human and we have defilements and we have our habitual tendencies that we have to work through, and we just have to keep really diligently keep working at them, and we may slack up a little bit, and then we just have to tighten it up a little bit again. So as we, I had the thought last night, I'll say it. The thought was going around about how I came here wanting to get the jhanas, and all I got was, and I thought, I came here wanting to get the jhanas and all I got was a cold. But it's been a great study in the elements. But as we, I'm sure people have noticed some energy shifts within. It's really hard not to when you, it's pretty apparent that this is the last full day and things are going to be changing. There's some transitioning already beginning. And it's hard to imagine what it, you know, make this moment like the 1:30 on Saturday afternoon last week when we were just starting the retreat. Because we've already got that, I'm sure for most people, there's some kind of momentum going out. Just beginning to organize things in your room, beginning to pack, fold up things, kind of having some kind of a timeline of when you'd like to get out of here, or if you're meeting up with someone, or I mean, you know, so any number of things, and that's perfectly normal. But the retreat's not over yet, so take advantage of this last day together. It's a very wonderful, supportive situation. or in an environment where we have a wonderful teacher in Lungpur. If we were in Thailand, we'd never have the opportunities to get as close to him as we do. And so it's very special. We're very fortunate to have someone who's as compassionate and generous in that compassion. And then just to have the support that we have with the other monastics, very harmonious team, people helping each other, supporting each other, then the other yogis, everybody doing their little chore to add to make this a complete picture. Hitesi taking care of all the various runs into town for little items here or there, or taking care of people's needs. Two wonderful cooks. It really doesn't get better than this. All we have to do is practice. And so this has been, this will have been 10 days, and then we'll all enter back out into our worlds, in whatever form that is. And one thing I was thinking to consider is, as we do that, sometimes after we've had a break like this, it's helpful to review. Now you've been away from your routine. Sure, some routines have been going on for a long time, and this has only been a 10-day break, but you've had this break from your routine. You've had a chance to see some things that are helpful for you. And now as you enter into your lives again, back out in the world, into your other routines, are there things you can let go of? Are there things that are not helpful that actually take you in a direction that's not a skillful direction to go, or that keep you busier than you really need to be and kind of pull your energies out? It's a great time when you've had a break like this to just kind of review that and just see what's been useful and what you might be able to do without, or how you might shift something, some little thing even. And then, I mean, it is hard. I know I frequently when we do the 2-week self-retreats, I've done the lemon maple syrup fast, and I get all excited because I'm off caffeine and and then I'm never going back on caffeine again. And then it's probably 3-4 days and then I'm back into my teas. You know, so, you know, these habits are hard, and so we have to be patient with ourselves. But really look and see is this really good for me? Is this helping me? That's just one thing. Another thing that was crossing my mind is just to be really aware of what you put into this mind, whether it's through watching television or the people that you associate with or activities that you do, or do you listen to too much news? What you put in, that affects your practice. It affects your heart. If you want to get chocolate chip cookies and all you use is oatmeal and flour, sugar, butter, salt, you're not going to get chocolate chip cookies. So you have to figure out what is useful. There's some things you can't avoid, because most of us have things we have to do, responsibilities. Even in the monastery, we have responsibilities, things we have to do. But there are things we can control of what we put in, and it's really crucial to really be aware of what kind of things you're putting in visually, auditorially, associating with, you know, other people. Really affects our view, affects our just our that clarity. It's really easy to lose that clarity, and especially once we leave this protected, supportive environment, and all of a sudden we have a lot more responsibilities. And it can sometimes feel quite overwhelming. So it's really important to consider what kind of things can keep some space and keep things from becoming overwhelming. Because it's really important to sustain some kind of level of formal practice in your outside lives that aren't in retreat. And and then just to be able to be fluid with that practice, so that you take it from your cushion into the activities that you then have to go and do. There's one chant that I really, really like a lot. It's the highest blessings. And there's a lot of really good clues in there about what's useful and what's a blessing. And I really suggest people look at that. It's some of them are like associating with the wise, avoiding those of foolish ways. And that's, sometimes that's difficult to do because we have friends that maybe are living a lifestyle that isn't very conducive to clarity, calm, peace, joy. So sometimes we have to make some decisions. I'm going to take the book because I can't remember them all. But this one just has so much really, really good stuff in it. Some of you are going to places where you don't have the support of a sangha nearby. And excuse me for sniffling so much, but we have a website. And so you can associate with the wise through the website. Some of the other ones are honoring those worthy of honor. So sometimes we may be drawn towards football player, basketball player. I think, wow, they're the greatest thing. It's okay. It's okay. That's true. Sometimes they're incredibly talented. But really, is that where you want to put your energy into that kind of stuff? Or discipline highly trained, and that's kind of, to me, that's remembering to keep our mindfulness, keep coming back to mindfulness. If you find you've strayed, just keep coming back, paying attention and making that a priority. Precepts or any kind of what you use for your guidance, for your structure, to help define that. It's really helpful. Speech that is true and pleasant to hear. As somebody was saying, the fourth precept is really difficult, and that's so true. But it's okay, you know. It may take a lifetime to refine the speech, but we've got time, and we can keep chipping away at it word by word or silent moment by silent moment, because sometimes that's the most skillful form of speech. Yeah, just cherishing family. That could be your direct family or who you consider your family by proximity. They may not be blood family, but they're family. Cherishing those moments with each other. Valuing that time together, because we never know how long that's going to be. It can change so quickly. And sometimes looking at it that way, too, helps us with speech, helps us with actions, just that reminder that we don't know. Never part with harsh words. Generosity and a righteous life, So living as skillfully as you can and being as generous with your time as you can be, or your if somebody needs a little bit of help from you, maybe they just want to talk to you, you can listen. There's many ways of sharing your generosity with others. Ways of work that harm no beings. Just consideration for life and the lack of regret and the opening of the heart that that provides or allows. Steadfast in restraint and shunning evil ways. It's pretty straightforward. So really practicing restraint, noticing when you tend to be going in excess in one direction or in something, and do I really need this? Is this distraction or is this necessity? Avoiding intoxicants that dull the mind. It's one of the precepts, and really the reason for that is because of what you might do when your mind is dull. So it's kind of, that's a kind of self-protection. Respectfulness and of humble ways, that's kind of can be a tough one, because humility is, it's very humbling when you feel like you've had insights and you have an understanding of something, and then something happens and you feel like you've gone back to square one. It's very humbling because we are human. So I know I many times when I've had that 2-week retreat and I feel a lot of metta comes up or a lot of space, and I've noticed in the past I come out and within 2 minutes of interaction with somebody there's irritation. Went for 2 weeks, there was no irritation. So it's very humbling how quickly we slip back into our habits. So we have to be very patient. Contentment and gratitude, those are wonderful things to reflect on. Contentment, gratitude. Patience and willingness to accept one's faults. That's another hard one. Very hard sometimes to see that. I know I've experienced that many times, just being so sure that I'm correct and I'm right in what I'm doing, and then realizing that if I'm fortunate to have somebody mirror it for me, realizing that actually I'm a little bit out of line, or I'm holding it in the wrong way and viewing it in the wrong way. And then somebody just can help me just open that up a little bit so that I can see other ways of looking at that, other ways that might be worked with. And oh yeah, that was, or else even sometimes it's even just stopping and looking, and things have happened so fast you haven't really noticed where an action, what the root of that was. And then you see where the root was, and it was unwholesome. But you didn't see it fast, you didn't see it enough, soon enough to stop the action. So being willing to accept that we're not always right. Those are just, that's just one chant that I find really useful just for some guidelines. And I love it anyway. It's just we have these blessings. So as we probably had experiences on the retreat, on this retreat, it's been a really wonderful group, very spacious, feels really grounded in here. And I don't know, people probably have mixed feelings. Some people may be experiencing excitement that the retreat's almost over, or could be regret. I remember one retreat I was working. It was a metta retreat. It was like within the first 6 months that I'd been practicing, and something came up during that retreat, just coincidentally. It was an anniversary of my great aunt's death. And just being in the space that I was in and my heart being a little bit open, I got a glimpse of a regret that I had that I hadn't been aware of. And when she had a throat cancer, and when she was dying, I went to see her with my little brother, and I told her that I would come the next day. I had to go. We had someplace we had to be. And so I had to go, and I felt bad leaving because I felt like she didn't want us to leave. So I said, oh, I'll come back tomorrow. But really, the next day I had plans. I was supposed to be going somewhere else. And I remember my mom, and my mom got up with me, and we were talking. I was going, I don't know what I should do. I told her I'd come back. And my mom was great. She said, well, I can't tell you what to do. You have to decide. And so I ended up going off and keeping my plans and not going to see my aunt. And I never saw her again alive. And I never realized that I carried that until I took this retreat. and it was her birthday. And so my heart was open taking this retreat. And it was a real blessing. I got to see that was something I was holding on to. And we'd been working a little bit and talking during the retreat about forgiveness. And so I really, really wholeheartedly put my effort into, I remember walking around the grounds at Amaravati and just feeling schizophrenic because you were younger and you didn't really want it, wasn't comfortable. Yes, but you should have done it. And why didn't you? And, well, da-da-da-da. I'm sure you all know the feeling and the story. And then it's just wording in my mind, I forgive you. And it got in. Got in, I forgave myself. And it was a really interesting thing because in that release of forgiveness, the mind went into a kind of a concentration that lasted for a few days, and I'm not going to speculate about what kind, but my mind focused in much more easily as a result of that release and that letting go. But then, what did I do with it? Then the retreat, he kept saying on the retreat, some of you have had these really good retreat, good experiences, and don't attach to them. And I'd be thinking, I'm not attached, not attached. And then the bell would ring, and I'd go, but I'm not attached. And then, I'm not exaggerating either, that retreat ended, and he said, okay, and then rang the bell, and it was over. And I literally collapsed in a heap, and I was weeping. And it was like, oh my gosh, I was attached. So we can be pretty dense sometimes. But it stands out really strongly. So forgiveness is a very powerful thing to carry with you, as well as accepting your faults. It's also forgiving yourselves and the ability to have compassion and understand others and forgive them. It's really important also to make sure you have contact, I don't know, with Kalyanamitta, with your spiritual friends. Find some spiritual friends that you can meet with regularly to either discuss some sutta that you would decide you want to read, or one of the Dhamma books, or a talk that you listen to. There's so many resources available. We've had people who are so inspired by the Dhamma offered by this lineage that Sakula, for example, so inspired. She'd been in a Zen tradition and was very inspired meeting the monks from this tradition, and lived in Portland and started a sitting group. And you just don't know with that kind of intention, with that kind of energy, what can happen. And now they have it grew from a sitting group, and it's grown to a very strong and skillful group of people acting together. They've recently purchased a center. They support the Hermitage. They invited the monks to come to White Salmon, and they support the Hermitage there. And they do. They have their own teaching schedule. The monks come once a month. And then there's other teachings that happen. And that was just from an idea that it would be good to have other support and to share this, to get some kind of sitting group going. And so you just don't know when there's an intention, a really good, strong, pure intention. And it's not easy sometimes. When I was asked if I wanted to be part of a group of people to get a monastery started in California, my first thought was, I don't want anything to do with it, because I'd seen how pulled the monastics were in England. But this voice just said, well, you can't, you've had an opportunity that other people might not have, and you can't not do this. So I did get involved, and there were times when I wondered what the heck I was doing, because I just wanted out. I think I resigned from the board probably, oh, I don't know, 10 times. They never let me do it. I remember saying to Lumpur Semedo one time on a retreat, I said, oh, Lumpur, we just had a board meeting before this retreat, and I resigned, and I'm not sure if that's the right thing to do, and I don't know, and he just goes, well, just don't do it. And it was just, so, wow, he's just hearing him say that for some reason made it so obvious. So figuring out, you know, things aren't always easy, but you have to keep coming back to figuring out what you can do to support yourself, to gather friends around you that are also leaning in the same direction, so that you can associate with people who have similar aspirations, similar interests. In the early days of, before Gil's group, Gil Fronsdale's group was organized, I was sitting with that group, and it was before Gil was there, and it was just Howard Noodleman, and we would just meet at a Unitarian or Presbyterian church, their library, and it was probably 10 people. And Howard Noodleman was there, and he would give some teachings. And then Howard was diagnosed with cancer and had to stop teaching, and that was about the time that Gil came to Stanford and was working at Stanford. And so Gil took over. And that's just blossomed into this center. They have a center in Redwood City. I was going to say Redwood Valley. In Redwood City. That's just really grown. The group just grew really fast. He drew a lot of people to him. And then now they have a retreat center in the Santa Cruz area that's run completely on Donna. And the retreatants are the ones who cook and everything. So I haven't actually experienced it, but I hear things about it. So Betsy was a landscaper there, was in charge of landscaping for a couple years and 3 years. And it's a beautiful center. I have seen it, a center. And, you know, it's just somebody's inspiration and supported by good intention. And probably a lot of patience. And a lot of feeling of failure and sometimes, or coming up against others. And, you know, it's just it's a great work of practice. So, you know, if you're in an area where there's not a lot going on, then you can make something available in your space or find a couple other people who are interested. And like I said, the website, they post the talks pretty much the next day for the after Saturday nights or after the Wanpras. So it's kind of finding ways of supporting yourself, because the world pulls at us. And it pulls at us in many different directions. And it's really hard not to get sucked into a lot of those pulls. And you have to give time to those other things, because that's just the way of life. But really encouraging people to give, you know, if all you can manage is 10 minutes a day to sit in meditation, then I think that's worthwhile doing. Looking over the chants once in a while, the chants are just potent with teachings, and really wholesome, valuable teachings. And if you chant them a lot, they come back to you at odd times. I can remember I used to work for a land surveyor, and I was holding the rod, and it was for a landscape architect, so we were locating everything, and there were these little lights on the ground, and I put the thing down, and he was calling them lamps. So lamps, lamp, and I was going, the teaching of the Lord like a lamp, and I was going, wow. But you know, I mean, that's okay. The Buddha came into my mind at that moment, and that's not a bad thing. So it's just that it puts it there so that when you least expected it, it may be there for you to draw from. But really the friends, I think the finding spiritual friends that can support you and that support what you're doing and that you can support, I think that's really essential. Really essential. I feel very blessed to be able to live in a monastic environment. And I still kind of straddle both worlds in a way. Some duties and some things that I do with my family, my father, to help him out a little bit. And that's pretty regular. But I'm so grateful because I'm in an environment that I can forget. I can get bogged down by things I'm doing in the office, and I can create as much work in there as I want to. I could stay in there 24 hours a day and I'd find things to do. So, but that's not what we're encouraged to do. And really, I have to keep asking myself, is that really necessary? So, just kind of learning to put things down when it's a possible, appropriate time. But I have all these reminders, and I have a community that comes together in the mornings and comes together in the evenings, most evenings and most mornings, to meditate together. That comes together to meditate on the observance nights, to do all-night sittings. And that's a big support. It's a huge support. I'm sure I wouldn't be getting out of bed at 3:20 in the morning, every morning, if I was on my own. It'd be really hard to do. But I can set that that goal. And it's much easier to do because I know other people are going to be doing something like that. We're all going to be gathering. I might have to stop there because my mind is a little bit foggy. There's a bit of liquid water element in there. But anyway, just I guess what I'd like to do is just... it's been a wonderful 10 days... There's really good teachings, really good questions, really lovely, harmonious group. And this is just building. It's like this is what you've been putting in. So just remember that you can keep putting in this kind of thing in your life rather than reading about a lot of garbage that's happening out there. And direct your mind. Keep your mind directed at least on this path. Because it's really really worth it, just like I said with both Mungta Mahabua and with Ruth Dennison, just both of them. The gratitude that they had for the time that they put in, and just the gratitude for the Dhamma. That to me is so inspiring when I see people, and I know people have really put their lives into it. There's one other little thing that comes to mind really quickly, and that was in working with the elements. Ajahn Dhan is a monk in Chonburi area of Thailand, and I stayed at his monastery for a month. I must have read one of his talks that had been translated into English. But he did a lot of work with the elements. And so he was really working with his food. So he would look into his bowl, and he would really made a lot of effort to break the food down into the elements. And I hope I get this right. But then there was one day, and he said he looked into his bowl, and he saw earth element, and he saw water element. He didn't see curry, rice. He actually saw elements, and it brought him to tears. So our efforts are worth it. We just have to keep plugging away, keep raking those leaves, and more will fall. Just keep raking them. But it's really worth the effort, because we've been really blessed, and those efforts are the highest blessings as well. So just encourage all of you as you begin to gather yourselves to move out and move on to whatever else you have to do to really hold this time and this Dhamma closely and take it with you and help let it help guide you. It's the highest blessing.